It's nearly 12 o'clock, and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT. On 100.1 FM, it's your public radio station. We're broadcasting from up here on Signal Hill in beautiful downtown Kodiak, Alaska, where it is 57 degrees under semi-overcast skies. Out at the airport, they have 72% humidity, northeast winds to 9 miles per hour, and 10 miles of visibility. Well, we're down to just a 20% chance of rain before 1 p.m. and partly sunny skies after that. We've blown right through our predicted high of 56, and our northeast winds are about 5 as predicted. They're expected to become completely calm this afternoon. Mostly clear skies tonight with a low of 48, south winds to 5, and partly sunny tomorrow with a high near 56, light southerly winds to 10 in the morning. Coming up on the Midday Report, Kodiak's Touch Tank and Aquarium, a very popular exhibit for children, may reopen sometime in the coming weeks. Young students in a Juneau school district were encouraged to drink something that turned out not to be milk. And we have the preliminary results from Saturday's special primary election.
Live from NPR News, I'm Lakshmi Singh. Borrowing costs for things like credit card purchases, homes, and cars are about to go up again. Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell says the central bank's raising a key interest rate 0.75 percentage point, the most in nearly 30 years.
The economy and the country have been through a lot over the past 2.5 years and have proved resilient. It is essential that we bring inflation down if we are to have a sustained period of strong labor market conditions that benefit all.
Inflation remains the highest in 40 years. An 18-year-old white man is now looking at the possibility of the death penalty after he was charged with more than 24 counts of federal hate crimes for the mass shooting targeting black people at a supermarket in Buffalo last month. 10 people were killed, 3 were wounded. Attorney General Merrick Garland alleges Peyton Gendron spent months preparing for the attack.
The affidavit alleges that defendant wrote about his acquisition of firearms and other supplies for the attack and traveled to Tops on multiple occasions to sketch the interior of the store, count the number of black people present, and observe the presence of black security guards.
The U.S. will provide an additional $1 billion in military aid, including artillery and ammunition, to help Ukraine push back Russian forces in the country's east. NPR's Tom Bowman has the latest.
After meeting with NATO allies, Joint Chiefs Chairman General Mark Milley said the additional artillery will allow Ukrainian forces to strike a significant number of Russian targets. General Milley also said Russia is now outgunning Ukraine, but said it was not a done deal that Russia would be able to control the entire eastern Donbas area. The new package includes another 18 howitzers. That's added to the more than 100 howitzers the U.S. already sent. Milley said by month's end, Ukraine will be able to field another U.S. long-range artillery system called HIMARS that will be able to fire rockets some 50 miles. Tom Bowman, NPR News, Washington.
Environmental groups are suing to vacate oil and gas drilling permits issued by the Biden administration. NPR's Laura Benshoff reports they argue federal agencies fail to consider the harmful effects burning those fossil fuels would have on the environment.
The Biden administration has approved more than 3,500 applications for oil and gas drilling permits. Conservation groups now argue in court that those approvals violate protective statutes, including the Endangered Species Act and the National Environmental Policy Act, by failing to take into account how burning fossil fuels contributes to climate change and degrades the environment. The groups are asking a judge to vacate the permits and stop the federal government from issuing more. A spokesperson for the Department of the Interior declined to comment. The suit comes as the federal government is under heightened pressure to balance high energy costs with climate change concerns. Laura Benshoff, NPR News.
It's NPR.
Ang NPR Balita ay hatid sa inyo ng Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. Para sa kaukulang impormasyon tungkol sa aming mga serbisyo, tumawag lamang sa 481-2400.
For KMXT, I'm Terry Haynes. The aquarium and touch tank at the Kodiak Fisheries Research Center on Near Island is hoping to announce its reopening to the public in the coming weeks. KMXT's Kirsten Dobroth reports.
The touch tank and aquarium at the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration's Kodiak Lab is where kids and adults can get their hands on all types of squishy and slimy creatures that live under the sea. During a normal summer, the tank is open to the public 6 days a week. It first closed because of the pandemic back in 2020, and the issue hindering its reopening since then has been staffing. Dave Conrad is the director of the Engineering and Facilities Department with the Kodiak Island Borough. He says he's fielded calls from many Kodiak residents who'd like to see the tank reopened to the public.
Borough staff is fully aware and is in favor of reopening the facility.
The facility where the touch tank is located is owned by the Kodiak Island Borough, which means the borough has also funded the tank's interpretive specialist position since 2017. Funding for the position dried up around the time the pandemic shut down public access to the tank. The borough's budget, which was passed by assembly members earlier this month, doesn't include funds for a touch tank staff position. But Conrad says he's optimistic the tank will reopen on a part-time basis in the coming weeks.
I am making a presentation to give to the assembly when that can be scheduled to nail down how we're funding the position.
Reopening the touch tank was also a high priority for those in attendance during the public hearing portion of last week's Borough Assembly work session. Kodiak resident Patrick Cummings was one of several speakers who addressed the assembly regarding the tank's closure.
What's going on in the tank is meaningful and important. And I ask myself, and I hope you guys are asking yourselves, the impossible question of how many dollars is that worth to get a kid interested, excited, or thrilled about things that are meaningful, significant, and important.
Before the pandemic, 15,000 people visited the touch tank at the Kodiak Lab annually, according to NOAA's website. In Kodiak, I'm Kirsten Dobrath.
On Tuesday, young students in a Juneau School District summer school program were given a chemical product used to seal floors instead of milk to drink at breakfast. KTOO's Claire Strimple has that story.
Juneau School District officials say 12 children and two adults drank the sealant. The incident happened at Glacier Valley Elementary in a summer school program known as Rally that serves kids ages 5 to 12.
It's an unacceptable mistake.
Barry Nightum's 7-year-old daughter drank some of the sealant. He said he was shocked and infuriated.
I don't see my daughter going there anymore. You'd have to have people, you know, people that are running it removed and have new people running it.
His wife, Ryan Nightum, says she got a call from a program administrator around noon, hours after the incident. Initially, parents heard it was paint thinner in the milk.
She called and told me that there was traces of paint thinner in the drinks. And I'm just like, what does that even mean?
The sealant is a product called Hilliard Seal 341. Its safety data sheet says it's, quote, expected to be a low ingestion hazard. Ryan was told that the administration took the cups away from the children and called a poison control center, then waited and monitored the children. They said no one needed to be hospitalized. When she asked for more information, administrators told her the issue was under investigation. She says her daughter is okay so far, other than an upset stomach. The Rally program has not responded to requests for comment. At a scheduled Board of Education meeting Tuesday night, Superintendent Bridget Weiss said the district is doing a full investigation with the Juneau Police Department.
And that is transpiring literally as we speak, so that we can understand exactly what happened, how it happened. We obviously need to make sure that it doesn't happen again.
Weiss said the fluid was mistaken for milk.
Which sounds hard to believe, but if you have yourself used anything similar, it is surprising. It is white, milky-like fluid.
She called the incident concerning. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Claire Strimple.
Saturday's special primary election for the U.S. House was the first test of Alaska's new election system. We'll have more results on that election today. But in the meantime, Alaska Public Media's Liz Ruskin looks at what's next and whether the new method for choosing candidates passed its first test.
Jason Grin is an advocate of the voting system adopted as ballot measure 2 in 2020. He says the primary was a big success.
We saw wide and diverse candidate list. We saw, you know, a number of people pick who they want to and still see that they have choices after this primary gets certified, that they'll still have someone that they can be excited about. We had a great voter turnout.
Grin is the executive director of Better Elections, a nonprofit that educates voters on the new system. The voting that ended Saturday was actually phase one of the test, a nonpartisan special primary with 48 candidates on one ballot. Voters appear to have chosen Republicans Sarah Palin and Nick Begich, nonpartisan Al Gross, and Democrat Mary Peltola as the four who will advance to the special general. But Peltola is only a few thousand votes ahead of Republican Tara Sweeney, and she's only a few hundred votes ahead of the nonpartisan Santa Claus. And there are tens of thousands of ballots yet to count, particularly from Anchorage. Phase two of the test comes on August 16, when voters will rank the candidates in what's been likened to an instant runoff election. The winner will serve the remaining months of Congressman Don Young's term. Some regions have a high percentage of rejected ballots. Grin says he's waiting for details from the Division of Elections, but he suspects a lot of the rejections were because voters did not have a witness sign their ballot envelope.
That had, you know, nothing to do with ballot measure 2 or these changes.
This was Alaska's first statewide election by mail, and Grin says maybe voters in some areas weren't familiar with the requirements. Republican Party Chair Ann Brown didn't respond to an inquiry for this story. Democratic Party Director Lindsey Kavanaugh says the special was probably not a great test of the new style of primary because of the mailed ballot and because candidates had only a few weeks to campaign. But she says the preliminary results suggest it's not all about name recognition and raising money.
Mary Peltola is a first-time statewide candidate. She was out fundraised by the others in the top three, and yet she, you know, right now is still over the finish line. So I think that we have to really think about, when we talk about viability, what does that mean?
Republican media professional Art Hackney also finds Peltola's standing interesting because so far it looks like she got more votes than several candidates who had larger campaign operations.
So those are the kinds of things that are telling is that, you know, the institutional wisdom of, oh, you got money, you got support, blah, blah, blah. It doesn't work if you're not a compelling candidate. And that really does, at the end of the day, you got to go look people in the eye and you got to convince them to want to support you.
Hackney, who will be working on Nick Begich's campaign, also holds the view that the special election was just too, well, special to be a true test of the new open primary. Reporting from Anchorage, I'm Liz Ruskin.
The Fairbanks City Council is considering an ordinance to fund security patrols at a downtown area plaza where tourists mix with locals who are struggling to survive. KUAC's Dan Bross reports.
Meeting Monday, the Fairbanks City Council advanced an ordinance that would use bed tax money to pay for security at Golden Heart Plaza. The council heard about public safety concerns related to homeless people in the downtown Riverside Plaza. Julie Jones with the nonprofit Festival Fairbanks, which manages the plaza, told the council the situation is not new, but has gotten worse.
The last 3 years, we've had a lot more camping, a lot more drinking in public, openly being aggressive with people, which is kind of new. The panhandling and stuff like that and being aggression toward visitors has never been as much of a problem as it is in the last 2 years.
City police and community service patrol officers are already stretched thin, and Jones advocated for temporary funding for a new security officer to patrol the plaza over the next few months. She also encouraged local organizations to come together to discuss a long-term solution. Billy Castle with the faith-based street outreach group Angels in Motion urged compassion.
You know, we can't herd these people from one street to the other just because we don't want them there. They are hurting. They've been hurt.
We need to make sure when we're talking about safety, the safety of the public, that the homeless people are also part of the public that we are trying to protect.
Julie Smith, a board member with the local anti-hunger organization Breadline, also read from a letter to the editor from the organization's director, Hannah Hill.
As a society, we moralize and point to behaviors that are clearly the result of trauma as the cause of homelessness. We blame drugs and drinking and laziness and mental health. But there is one cause for our town's problem. It's us. The homelessness is a crime of society.
As originally proposed, the ordinance before the council would have redirected nearly $228,000 of this year's bed tax revenue from Explore Fairbanks for tourism marketing to instead pay for security officers at Golden Heart Plaza. Explore Fairbanks president and CEO Scott McCray said the organization wants to help, but coming off the pandemic cannot afford an 11% cut to its bed tax allocation.
We want to be part of the solution, but we don't want to be the solution, especially when it comes at the expense of jeopardizing our destination marketing efforts when we're still an industry that is still in recovery.
The city council amended the ordinance to increase the bed tax from 8 to 9% and direct the additional revenue generated to security at Golden Heart Plaza. Second reading and public hearing for the measure was postponed until the council's July 25th meeting. In the meantime, Mayor Jim Matherly said he has directed the police to spend more time at Golden Heart Plaza. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
From search parties to vigils, the community of Homer has spent the last 2.5 years rallying behind Sarah and Ed Berg as they've searched for their daughter, 38-year-old Anisha Duffy Murnan. Murnan went missing on October 2019. Now police believe they've arrested the man who killed her. On Sunday, the community gathered around the Bergs for a different reason, to remember Murnan and other missing and murdered loved ones from around the state.
Murnane's lifelong friend, Tayla O'Donnell Bacher, was one of several people who memorialized Murnane on Sunday at the Homer Public Library, where there's a new bench in honor of her and other missing and murdered people across Alaska.
So, like, the big picture of when I think of Duffy is her ability to tap in at all the different parts of her life, to all the really specialness of childhood, where you're present and in the moment and adoring everything it is to be innocent and sweet and cute. You know, she just embodied that.
Murnane's mother, Sarah Berg, was the vision behind the bench. On Sunday, she traced Murnane's life from childhood.
She was timid and shy, not a wave maker, withdrew from conflict, not a leader, just showed by example. Never idle, always making something. Every craft known to man was made at our house, all entered in the Ninochik Fair, from pigs to pictures.
Berg and Murnane took trips together to Mexico and Thailand, where they met kids and babies in orphanages. Murnane loved babies. She looked after many in Homer as a babysitter and a Montessori teacher. Tom Kazaya remembers dropping his kids off with Murnane on his way into town.
In spite of everything, that's the image I'm left with is safety and security with Duffy, and that's what I come away with.
There are references to Murnane's love for babies on the new Loved and Lost Memorial Bench. Homer's Brad Hughes has been working on the piece for the last 9 months, sculpting and carving the clay for the bench's arms in his backyard and trying to get all the individual faces of every character just right. There's a little boy, a mother huddled over a baby, a woman with a dog at her feet.
Every character took more than a month to pull out of the clay because a lot of times they don't look good at all. They look terrible. They don't make any sense, or their emotions are wrong, or their gestures wrong, or they're not going around the corner.
The characters come from either side of the bench, those who are lost on one side and their families on the other. Around the back, they reach toward each other, not quite touching. It's a solemn scene, and Hughes said he worried at first about putting a bench with a dark message in public. But he says he's since realized how important it is to spotlight the phenomenon of missing and murdered people around Alaska. The Berg said Sunday that through their search for their daughter, they've been pulled into a deeper understanding of that issue and how it impacts Indigenous women, specifically, who are murdered at 10 times the rate of non-Native women. At the ceremony, several families spoke about their missing relatives from around the state. Blair Akbialuk of Nome hasn't seen her sister Florence, a mother of one, for almost 2 years.
Not a day goes by that I don't look at your picture or smile or both. August 31st was the day that changed my life forever.
She says search efforts are dwindling, but the family is still looking. Ingrid Cumberledge from Sand Point is the first missing and murdered Indigenous persons coordinator for Alaska through the U.S. Department of Justice.
I have listened to a lot of stories across Alaska in the last 2 years. And many of you are here that I've listened to across the state. And so I share, this is hard work. And it's amazing that Homer has come out to participate in this hard work and really share with your family.
She says she's noticed the resilience of families working to eradicate the issue. That's something Hughes, the artist, incorporated into his bench among the portrayals of sadness and suffering.
One of the emotions of people is hope. I mean, we can't leave out hope.
It'll be one of the last touches on the bench. Hughes plans to put a lotus-shaped light behind the piece that will shine a soft glow on the sculpture, night and day. He also says they've made a mold of the bench. That means communities across Alaska can order their own to commemorate their own loved and lost ones. In Homer, I'm Sabine Pooks.
Today's KMXT Local News is brought to you in part by Discover Kodiak, a one-stop source for visitor information on Kodiak and other destinations around the state. On the web at kodiak.org and at the Visitor Center in the Ferry Terminal Building at 100 Marine Way, 486-4782.
Insight Daily Radio. Iconic guitarist Eric Clapton's lifelong passion for the blues burns brightly in a new film and soundtrack release entitled Nothing But the Blues. The documentary film, which was nominated for an Emmy Award but was broadcast only once in the U.S. in 1995, has been upgraded to 4K for its long-awaited official Blu-ray and DVD release. The new soundtrack album features all of the music from the 1995 film and also includes more than an hour of previously unreleased live performances recorded in 1994 during the legendary guitarist tour supporting From the Cradle, his Grammy-winning multi-platinum blues album. Eric spoke about his lifelong love and respect for the blues and its impact on his playing.
The merest glimpse of a Bo Diddley or a Chuck Berry would send me into frenzies of delight. So when I heard what was behind that, I mean, that was like the front scenery of what I was to later discover. And when I found the stuff that was behind it that made that come into being, you know, the Muddy Waters, and beyond that, the Robert Johnson, and beyond that, the Work Song, it did something to me emotionally, for sure, but there was something much deeper going on which I cannot define at all and probably never will be able to.
That's iconic guitarist Eric Clapton, whose long-awaited documentary film and music soundtrack, Nothing But the Blues, will be released on multiple formats on June 24th. There's more at ericclapton.com. Insight Daily Radio.
Testing of Kodiak's new tsunami siren system and its components may occur Thursday, June 16th through Saturday, June 18th. Testing of the system may be confined to a single siren location or could involve the entire system. The City of Kodiak and the Kodiak Island Borough's vendor, West Shore Services Incorporated, will be on island at the time. Be cognizant that a white boom truck will be at various siren sites during the same time frame. Though sirens may be triggered for testing, the signals will not be continuous as they are during an actual tsunami warning event. If you have any concerns, please contact the Kodiak Island Borough at 907-486-9343.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to Wednesday. It is the 15th day of June, the year 2022. The sun rose today at 5:08. It will set again at 11:12 this evening. That will give us 18 hours and 5 minutes of daylight, a gain of 53 seconds compared to yesterday. Our record low is 36 set in 1989, and our record high was 77 set in 1969. We are closer to the latter. 57 degrees right now under overcast skies with 72% humidity and 10 miles of visibility. Look for partly sunny skies for the rest of the day today and high near 56, which we've gone right by. Mostly clear skies tonight with a low of 48, southeast winds to 5. Partly sunny tomorrow with a high near 56, light southerly winds. Let's go ahead and listen to the Alaska Department of Fish and Game's latest announcement.
Hello, this is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game and Kodiak with Kodiak Commercial Salmon Fishery Advisory Announcement Number 5, date issued 10 a.m. on June 15th. There will be a 57-hour commercial salmon fishing period in the Outer Carluck section of the Southwest Kodiak District from noon Thursday, June 16th until 9 p.m. Saturday, June 18th. There will be a 48-hour extension to the current commercial salmon fishing period from 9 p.m. Thursday, June 16th until 9 p.m. Saturday, June 18th in the following areas. In the Central and North Cape sections of the Northwest Kodiak District, the Outer Aikuluk section of the Southwest Kodiak District, and the Cape Alitak, Humpy Deadman, Alitak Bay, Mosier Bay, and Olga Bay sections of the Alitak District. The following areas will close to commercial salmon fishing at 9 p.m. Wednesday, June 15th. The Anton Larson Bay, Sheratine Bay, Kajuyak Bay, Terror Bay, Inner Uganic Bay, Spiridon Bay, Zacher Bay, and Uyak Bay sections of the Northwest Kodiak District. The Northwest Afognak, Paul's Bay, and Paranosa Bay sections of the Afognak District, Eastside Kodiak District, and the Big River and Outer Kukak Bay sections of the Mainland District. Closed waters will be reduced until 9 p.m. Wednesday, June 15th in the following areas. At Kathlea Creek, stream number 262301 to the stream terminus. And at Saltry Creek, stream number 259415 to the stream terminus. As previously announced, the following areas remain open to commercial salmon fishing until further notice. The Inner Katoy Bay, Outer Katoy Bay, Duck Bay, and Izhuit Bay sections of the Afognak District, Fowl Bay Special Harvest Area, and the Waterfall Bay Special Harvest Area. Fishermen are reminded that in the Kodiak area, including the Mainland District, until further notice, king salmon 28 inches or greater in length may not be retained by purse seine gear in the commercial fishery and must be returned to the water unharmed. Closed waters are reduced in the following locations: in Fowl Bay to the stream terminus at Hidden Lake Creek, stream number 251406, and in Waterfall Bay to the stream terminus at Little Waterfall Creek, stream number 251822, and to the stream terminus of Big Waterfall Creek, stream number 251821. And in Katoy Bay to the fishing game markers located at Little Katoy and Big Katoy Bays near stream numbers 252323 and 252324. Other closed waters are shown in the Kodiak Area Salmon Statistical Chart, detailed in commercial salmon fishing regulations and statistical charts. Harvest strategies and commercial salmon fishing regulations are available at the Kodiak Fish and Game Office. And, of course, the most recent salmon fishery information may be obtained by calling the department's 24-hour record phone at 486-4559. Thank you very much. Good luck fishing. And this is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
We have a high tide coming up here on the east side. That will happen at 4:09 p.m. and be 7.3 feet, followed by a low tide at 9:13 this evening of 2.2 feet. Tomorrow morning, we have another minus tide. That will happen at 10:21 tomorrow morning. It'd be minus 2.5 feet here on the east side. Over on the west side, your high tide this afternoon will occur at 4:26. That will be a 13.2-foot tide in Larson Bay, followed by a low tide at 10:01 p.m. of 3 feet. Your minus tide for tomorrow morning on the west side will happen at 10:50 a.m. and be minus 4 feet. Mariners, here's your forecast for Marmot Island to Sitkanat, Kodiak's east side. Northeast 15 today, seas to 5 feet. For tomorrow, south 15, seas to 3 feet. Over in the Shelikof Strait, northeast 15 today, seas to 3 feet. For tomorrow and tomorrow night, southwest 15, seas to 3 feet in the Shelikof. Job hunters, don't miss the Kodiak Chamber of Commerce Community Job Fair. That's happening tomorrow, 2 p.m. to 7 p.m. at the Kodiak College in the Benny Benson building. It's a chance to get to know Kodiak's top companies and jumpstart your career. Bring your resume and be ready for on-the-spot interviews. And in addition, Providence Kodiak Island Medical Center will be hosting an evening social that starts at 6 p.m. with food provided by the Den Catering.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT 3 times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the Midday Report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.